Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, the Mercy World, the Catholic Church, or social justice. Today, my visitor is Margaret Bowater. Margaret, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Thank you. Kia ora.
Margaret Bowater is a long experienced tutor, supervisor, dream facilitator, counselor, therapist, and co-founder of the Human Development and Training Institute. She's the author of Dreams and Visions, Language of the Spirit, and Healing the Nightmare, Freeing the Soul. She's a member of the International Association for the Study of Dreams and a lifelong Anglican and interested in strengthening people's inner resources for spiritual growth. For many years, Margaret has been facilitating workshops on dreams at the Mercy Spirituality Center. Among others, she offers introductory workshops, workshops on death, grief and healing, inspirational workshops, and workshops on nightmares. On her website, Margaret quotes a really interesting quote from Sigmund Freud, and he said, "The interpretation of dreams is the royal road to a knowledge of the unconscious activities of the mind." Margaret, this is the first year that you are offering the 202 workshops, the Dreamwork 202. These are workshops that seek to improve the skills of people who have previously been attending introductory workshops on dreams. Can you tell us more about these new workshops?
Yes, they are for people who have who probably are trying to use or willing to use dreams in their work with clients of various sorts. Most commonly counsellors who are exploring with their clients deeper into the motivations behind what's going on, but also suitable for nurses and clergy and anyone who, working with children, for example, and you're trying to help other people understand what's going on in their nightmares, in their dreams, in their visions. So in the 202 workshops, I am a coach rather than a teacher. The people who come to it, limited to six per session, bring a dream each, and I encourage them to share their dream, and the other members of the group practice their skills, and I try to keep myself quiet enough to coach them on their skills. And often we get into very powerful depth discussion, which really inspires people to continue their exploration of dream work and increase their confidence in working with other people, even casually working with other people, not necessarily in a formal dream work setting.
So they have to have a dream that they bring with them?
They bring a dream with them, yes.
And if they don't have a dream, what happens then?
The others usually have extra dreams. I mean, once you get interested in dream work, then you need to be keeping a dream diary, a journal, in which you record the dreams each morning as you wake. I mean, some people might only have one a week or one a month, but over time that builds up into a series. And looking back over a series of dreams, they begin to see how their inner self is working with issues in their life to try and achieve greater insight, greater commitment to what matters in their life, less to do with the kind of superficial things, and the journey of life from a spiritual perspective begins to be more apparent.
And so if you say that you have to have you should have a dream journal, does it mean that it's best to do an introductory course first so that you have some idea before coming to the 202?
Yes, in the 202, I'm not teaching the basic skills, only incidentally. In the 101, that's the introductory workshop, I teach the basic principles of dream work, what I regard as the essential knowledge that you need in order to be able to make sense, particularly about the metaphors that are used in dreams. I mean, dream work is a form of spiritual practice, really. And if you look at or read any of the great spiritual teachers in pretty well any religious understanding, they tend to use metaphors. They try to explain things of the spirit by comparing them with things that we can observe in nature or in among people around us. So we tend to dream about, for example, in our culture here in New Zealand, we tend to drive cars in order to get anywhere. So when you're dreaming that you're driving a car and you're chugging along quite happily in your car, and then suddenly it starts going backwards instead of forwards, and this wasn't because you thought of it. Now, some people would give up at that point and say, oh, this is crazy. But really, the dream is telling you something about some part of your life is not functioning well. In fact, it seems to be you're going backward in that part of your life. In other words, the car has become a metaphor for yourself moving along. And there are, you know, thousands and thousands of metaphors available to us all the time. But everybody's metaphors are a little bit different from everybody else's because of their own experience. And our dreams come to us in terms of our own experience and our culture, our family system, our nationality, our language. So, in a sense, I'm teaching people how to explore their own dreams rather than me try to interpret for them, because I don't know what somebody else's experience consists of.
That reminds me of some books that I've seen where you have certain symbols and it says, well, this symbol means this and this symbol means that, if you dream of this and if you dream of that. But as you say, everybody has different symbols.
That's right.
It might be the same. There might be some patterns that are the same all over in one culture.
The symbols of one culture are more easily recognized by people of that culture. But take another example. Take, for example, dreaming of snakes. Now, in Western culture, we tend to associate snakes with evil and deceit and negative things. But snakes are very ancient creatures, and they have other meanings in other cultures where they are much more part of the ordinary scenes of life. Some snakes are dangerous, but others are not. And of course, in ancient spiritual literature, the snake or serpent was considered to be a figure of wisdom. And there are ancient myths about snakes that suggest that they have something very wise to tell us at times. I mean, I recently dreamed about a beautiful snake, actually, that was lying on a rock in the sunshine, and it was golden colour. And as I used a bit of my inquiry process, I asked the snake, what do you have to say? And the snake says, take it easy, which makes good sense to me.
So that was the wise snake.
The wise snake, yes.
Not the evil one.
That's right.
For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Te Ngaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Margaret Bowater, and we've been talking about dreams and about keeping a dream journal and about some strange dreams. Margaret, you recently have published a book on nightmares, which is also available at our Mercy Spirituality Center. Why did you choose to write about nightmares?
Okay, well, everybody has sub-nightmares. Children have more nightmares than grown-ups do on the whole. But anyone who has come through abusive experience of any kind or lived in a zone of a city, for example, where there's a lot of community violence or been part of a culture in which there are open conflicts and wars going on, will have a lot more nightmares because they are experiencing trauma in their daily life one way or another. I mean, children who grow up, for example, in an alcoholic home where there is violence going on will have a lot of nightmares. And the problem about nightmares is that they are dreams. They wake you at a point of horror or terror when you feel helpless to know how you can prevent something dreadful happening. And that is often based on past experience, often early in your life, but maybe later, because terrible things happen to grown-ups too. Now, the point about nightmares is that they wake you before you have a chance to figure out how to survive. And basically, there was one theory about nightmares that they began way, way back in our early development as a contributor to our survival by replaying traumatic incidents so that we have a chance to figure out in the safety of our own dream life what you could do to save yourself if the same sort of thing happened again. And so the proper response to a nightmare, having, let's say, been wakened by it and been frightened, is when you have calmed down, probably the next day, that you sit down and think about it in terms of the story of the nightmare and figure out what you could do to help yourself survive the survival challenges, how are we going to do it. Sometimes it is because we have been through awful experiences which have historically happened, but the response that our minds have to traumatic events is to kind of repeat them and repeat them. They come again like aftershocks, like the aftershocks of an earthquake, for example. Your mind still has the aftershocks of that event. Now, what you can't change is the historical event that first happened. What you can change is the way it affects you afterwards. You need to come to terms with whatever is so frightening or was so frightening in your life and realise that you can, that life actually did go on. You went on living. So somehow you found a way to survive. But you don't need to keep repeating the feeling of being victimised all the time. So you can invent a new solution in which you manage to escape or overcome or confront or deal with the issue in one way or another. And the story goes on. But gradually, as over time, as you talk about it with other people too, you lose the terrible fear that goes with the original nightmare. And it just becomes a piece of your history. Oh, yes, I went through that kind of experience.
But it starts with doing having your diary, because I think that if you wake up and you just don't want to think about it anymore, that's the first problem, isn't it?
That's the first problem, yes. On the other hand, some of the experiences that people have in childhood stay with them as vivid dreams all their life if they have not resolved it. Some research was done by Kelly Bulkley, a major dream scholar in America, who asked people to identify what was their earliest remembered dream. The majority of them were childhood dreams of being attacked or abused or narrowly escaping from some very dangerous situation. So those kind of dreams stick in your mind. They may change a little bit in some of the detail, but I have worked directly with hundreds of people now who have told me about their nightmares, and I find that those very vivid early nightmares are still active in the person's mind to such an extent that they may even tremble when they're talking to me about a nightmare that began 30 years ago. Now, when they tell me the story and I listen as calmly and compassionately as is needed, they stop and they look at me and I say, well, what could you do to change the outcome, to make things happen better for you? And stay with the story of the dream. What could you do inside the dream? And most people then begin to think much more calmly, because they're a lot older now, they've got more resources, about how they could have handled it differently or how they could prevent it, such an event actually happening again. And when they've done that, I suggest to them that they If the dream recurs, which often they are, these are recurring dreams because they're still unresolved, that they go back into the dream story and make the new ending happen. In fact, consciously practice making the new ending happen. And then, if the dream recurs, next time they have a way out as an option.
And does that really work?
Because, yes, absolutely.
Because it's the unconscious, so you have to really convince yourself so that the solution becomes part of the dream, doesn't it?
That's right. I mean, the dream, these recurring dreams that cause such a lot of distress are following a neurological pattern that's got embedded in the brain by being repeated over and over. Once you start consciously to create an alternative pathway, then the brain has a choice and you don't have to go back through the dreaded path. You can go on another path. I mean, even things like actually believing that you're going to die. I mean, one of the options is actually to take yourself through the gateway of dying, the transition into the spirit world, and imagine yourself as a spirit surviving. In fact, some people even do that within their dreams.
Is that when you change your dreams in a way, is that kind of lucid dreams?
Lucid dreaming is a particular skill that some people seem to be born with. A few people develop. Many people try to develop, but it doesn't come naturally to most of us. What you can do, though, is when the nightmare has woken you up, you then become, you're awake. Then you consciously think of a solution, and when you've calmed down, you go back into the dream and apply the new solution. And I have known people who have resolved years of painful nightmares by simply doing that. I mean, one man who came to me had a terrifying dream that he had been dreaming as long as he could remember. And we searched through his life experience to find anything that might have triggered it, and we couldn't identify it. But when I asked him, were you ever hospitalized when you were a child? He said yes. He had been told that when he was 1.5 years old, he had been put into hospital with croup. Now, croup is a terrible coughing process, and the solution used to be, anyway, to put you inside a kind of tent with fumes that would release the blockage inside you. Now, a baby of 1.5 years old, in the days when parents were not allowed to stay, would, of course, be handed over to the nurses, carted along the way to a room, put into a tent, and assumed that he was going to die. Now, this guy that I was working with had been carrying that dream imagery, well, the sort of the feeling of it anyway, all of his life. Once we identified what had caused the start of it, and it used to disturb him terribly, and recognised, well, this did happen, so you can't get rid of it completely. You've got to think of a new ending. Well, then he started to think of a new ending, and he figured out that he could confront this awful doom shadow that kept approaching him to take him to his death, he thought. He could look at it and he could say, I can leave my body. Now, once he turned round and did that within his dream, having practiced it, he found that the doom threat disappeared out of his dream, and he was no longer afraid. And he was so excited by this discovery that he did it several times to make sure that it would work again. And then the next time I saw him a week later, he said, well, this is amazing. I haven't had any more of that dream, that nightmare. Furthermore, I'm sleeping better. And furthermore, I feel better all over because I'm getting better sleep. And one of the things about persistent nightmares, the ones that keep coming back and back and back, is that they do undermine the quality of sleep, because some people fear that if they get into bed and go to sleep, they will immediately have a nightmare. So they try to stop themselves having nightmares by staying up too late or something like that, and it doesn't work. You have got to be able to deal with the issue that causes the fear.
So what you explained with this man is a typical example of how you can help people who have bad dreams.
That's right, yes. I mean, I've worked with many people. I worked with a woman recently, an old, well, not old, a 70-year-old. A 70-year-old woman who came because she kept having angry dreams. Her dreams were full of anger. She was always having to do all the work for everybody in her dreams, and she was utterly furious about it all. So we went over her latest dream that she had had, and there were lazy men lying around doing nothing, which actually connected directly with her marriage as well as her work life. And so what I suggested to her was that she re-enter the dream and she actually say what was on her mind instead of swallowing it all down, which she had done all her life to be a very good girl. Anyway, she got into the feeling of the dream and she actually became extremely angry and expressed out loud at the figures in the dream what she felt about it all. Now, when she had done that, the figures in the dream had sort of sat up and taken notice and started to do a bit of work. She felt marvellous. And when she came back a week later, she said things had changed. Her dreams were not like that anymore and she was not angry with them anymore. She was now managing her own life.
Oh, that is great.
Yes, yes.
So just to help people understand their dreams and what they can do, that is already, it's opening new horizons for the people.
Yes, yes, because when they suffered whatever the experience was, especially if they were young, they may not have had much power over their life. Mm. But now when they're older, a few years older or maybe a lot of years older, they have a lot more power and a lot more options. And you can always call a spiritual figure in to help you in the dream.
What would you recommend to people who would be interested in their dreams but can't remember when they get up?
First of all, make sure that you have a pen and paper right beside the bed, ready. When you go to sleep the night before, make a commitment to yourself, whether it is simply a direct statement or whether it is a prayer, that you intend to remember your dream in the morning and write it down. Like it's parallel to the kind of self-hypnotic processes that are used by athletes or performers of any sort, that they commit to doing a good performance the next day. Same sort of process, you commit yourself. If you have a radio that switches, have an alarm that switches a radio on, switch the radio off, because the radio would pull your attention away directly out of the memory of the dream. Give yourself time, give yourself a minute or two to actively recall what you were dreaming about. Now, you won't catch one every day, but you might catch one a week, or you might catch several in a row when you're going through a crisis in your life, and then perhaps not any for a while because life has settled down again. But any disturbing process that you're involved in, big changes of any sort, you are likely to have disturbing dreams, even if they're not as big or as hard to deal with as nightmares.
Mm-hmm. So that means also if some of our listeners can afford sleeping in until 8:40, until our radio program starts, it would be good if they wake up 15 minutes earlier and write down their dreams and then have the radio on.
After they've had written down their dream, yes.
Mm. I think that can open many horizons and maybe yes. Give ideas also for maybe you want to write something or you want to write poetry or write a story.
Yes.
If you have already your dreams, you might have excellent ideas.
That's right.
It doesn't always have to be a nightmare.
That's right. I mean, most of the great writers in literature have used dreams as source material. Many of the great artists have used dreams. Musicians have recorded music that they've heard and found later that they hadn't heard it here. It's come through a dream. There's a song called Yesterday that was sung by the Beatles. That one came through a dream directly. Mm. Almost every discipline in the human arts and sciences, I mean, has come through a dream. Albert Einstein's formula for E equals MC squared was directly brought to his consciousness by a dozing state of mind.
I think you don't have all the distraction of daily life when you're sleeping or when you're dreaming.
Yes.
And I think that the dream is like, it's not the deepest phase of your sleep, isn't it? It's like this random...
Rapid eye movement sleep is one phase of sleep that you have mostly about four times a night. We go through a cyclic pattern of sleeping. We go down deep and then we come up again about every 1.5 hours. And at the peak of the cycle, each time it comes up again, you have a phase of rapid eye movement sleep, which can be recorded as a particular pattern of brain waves. And that's when you have the vivid dreams. We also do have some other kinds of kind of slow-moving dreams in between. Sleepwalking, for example, is another form of dreaming. It's not the usual rapid eye movement type.
Thank you very much. It's amazing what you can find out about dreams.
Mm.
And I do recommend the books that you have written.
Mm.
And as I said, we have one of the books, the one about nightmares. We also have it available at our Mercy Spirituality Center.
Yes.
And we'll have some events coming up with you at
yes.
our center. So we'll have on the 30th of June, we'll have Resolving Nightmares.
Yes.
6 hours.
Yes. That's a Saturday.
And then we'll have in November, we'll have another session on inspirational dreams and visions.
Yes.
And
August, we have another introductory one.
Okay, yes. Mm-hmm. And we'll have the 202 workshops in between.
Yes, yes.
So we have a variety of workshops, mm-hmm. and that is really amazing.
Mm. Everybody dreams.
Everybody dreams.
The problem is remembering.
Yes, and writing it down so that you remember it past a few minutes.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Margaret. And what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center? On Tuesday, the 22nd of May, from 7 to 9 p.m., Father Neil Darragh is going to present his first part of Laudato Si Pledge with the title Pray For and With Creation. The second part will be on the 30th of May. Our weekend for the writers is on the 25th until the 27th of May, the weekend. Joan Rosier Jones is coming and she's going to facilitate this workshop. And on the 7th of June, we'll have Father Pavlos Patitsas, who will facilitate a workshop on the topic Bearing One Another's Burdens, the Strength of Intercessory Prayer. Father Pavlos Patitsas is the Greek Orthodox priest in Auckland, and we will learn about how the earliest Christians helped and supported each other. So today we learned about how we help and support others who have dreams, whatever dreams they are.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody is welcome to the Dreamwork 101. You don't have to be a psychologist. Anybody can come.
That's right.
And the workshop coming up on the 30th of June on Resolving Nightmares is based on this book. The book is based on the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Right.
And for all the events at our center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or via our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. And I wish you all a good Friday and a good week ahead and good dreams.
Yes.
Thank you.
You.